I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Jew in the world, here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews, right here on the Absolution Network. This is episode 24, and tonight you get a bit more bang for your buck as we start off our month-long look at the Thanksgiving Day tradition, that is the Survivor Series. Yes, all month long we will be looking at the Survivor Series starting tonight with our look at Survivor Series 1998. Survivor Series that is memorable in more ways than one. It is memorable for the debut of one of the greatest wrestlers and WWE superstars of all time, along with the debut of one of the most infamous WWE superstars of all time. You not love a pay-per-view event that gives you that. So, yeah, we're going to get into that tonight. Now, when I said you're going to get a bit more bang for your buck tonight, I didn't just mean the review. As some of you might be asking, hey, Tom, at the end of last episode, didn't you say you're going to review Halloween Havoc 2000 to close out Monster Mash Month? Well, I was. In fact, I did watch Halloween Havoc 2000, and this was pretty much my response.
You dirty, stuck-up, sadistic, shit-eating, cock-sucking, butt-fucking, penis-smelling, crotch-grabbing, ball-licking, semen-drinking, dog-raping, Nazi-loving, child-touching, cow-humping, perverted, spineless, heartless, mindless, dickless, testicle-choking, urine-gargling, jerk-offing, horse-faced, sheep-fondling, toilet-kissing, self-centered, feces-puking, dildo-shoving, snot-spitting, crab-gathering, big-nose, monkey-slapping, bastard-screwing, bean-shitting, fart-knocking, sack-busting, splooge-tasting, bear-blowing, head-swallowing, bitch-snatching, hand-jobbing, donkey-caressing, mucus-spewing, anal plugging, hole grabbing, uncircumcised, sewer sipping, whoremongering, piss swimming, midget munching, douchebag, hole biting, carnivorous, mail order prostituting asshole!
Yeah, that was pretty much my response because it was the most awful pay per view I have ever seen. I don't even know if I remember watching this for a reason. I think for some reason I remember watching like the highlights of it that they showed the next night on Nitro. But this was at the tail end of WCW's days. And it showed. I mean, this was just an awful pay-per-view. I mean, because of that, I can't go on for more than 10 minutes to talk about this. I can review this entire pay-per-view in 5 minutes. Because it's that goddamn awful. Which is what I'm going to do. So before I get into Survivor Series, I'm going to get my review of Halloween Havoc 2000. It's a goddamn motherfucking awful podcast. Pay-per-view, as I said, podcast. Pay-per-view. You know, it's one of the most goddamn awful pay-per-views I have ever seen in my life. There were not a good match to be found. Let me do some proper English here. There wasn't a good match at all in this pay-per-view. Not one. I mean, I have a couple spots, but I couldn't do my three best matches, couldn't do three best spots. There wasn't a good match at this pay-per-view. They all sucked. You could tell most of the wrestlers weren't even trying anymore. You know, the production quality was awful. It looked like a WCW Thunder set. There was nothing in the pageant. You know, like, when we reviewed Halloween Havoc 97, even Halloween Havoc 94 and 93, there was pageantry, there was elegance to the stage, you know, and everything. There was nothing about this pay-per-view that screamed Halloween in the month of October. There was nothing. Nobody was trying in this pay-per-view. I mean, there were some people. Let me rephrase that. And really, I'm gonna give a shout out to the top three people who tried their damnedest. I mean, Goldberg did what Goldberg did, especially at that time. It was a squash match against two guys. You know, just clusterfuck after clusterfuck after clusterfuck. You know, just people not giving a damn and people being sloppy and just rolling around all over the place. I was embarrassed. And all I could think is, like, I am really glad that I did not buy this pay-per-view when it originally came out. Especially if I was the way I am now, when I had bought this pay-per-view when it came out, I would have wanted more than my money back. I would want somebody to hang. It was this goddamn awful. So, 0 out of 5 stars. There is nothing worth watching on this pay-per-view. Do yourself a favor. Never watch this pay-per-view. It's that awful. For everybody, by the way, who thinks, oh, he always gives good reviews. Yeah, well, here I am giving a completely negative review, except for this slight positive. I'm going to give my top three performers of the night. 1, Booker T. Champion, went out, did his best. I had a lot of energy, and it was great to see him. He was fluid. Too bad he was up against Big Papa Pump, who just was a clusterfuck. Of course, that whole storyline was a clusterfuck. Hugh Morris was really trying that ring. Too bad. I mean, if it was just him and Lance Storm, that would have been a great match. Too bad somebody decided to integrate Hacksaw Jim I'm So Fucking Old Duggan into that match. And my third best performer of the night, Major Guns. That's right. The character who her whole persona was to be in a Canadian bikini, shove her tits out, and do little things and like distract. Not well, right, but like do things trying to help Hugh Morris, aka General Erection, to win the United States title, was the third best performer of the night. She was actually putting in effort. Even though her one thing was to stand there, look pretty, and then, you know, there was a moment where Lance Storm is on the ring apron and she like throws him off and helps General Erection. And she did it perfectly. She had energy. She was cheerful. She was like, you felt like she was really trying to do whatever she could to help General Erection. She put in a better performance than most of the male superstars on this pay-per-view. All but two. And that means I'm saying she put in a better performance than Rey Mysterio and Billy Kidman. I mean, there were things. I mean, like, just so many disappointments. Like, there was the match that was supposed to be between Conan and Shane Douglas, which normally would be a good match. But then you had Tigress and you had Tori Wilson, and it was supposed to be a mixed gender match. And You know, you had Tori coming out in a Wonder Woman outfit. If you don't know, Tori Wilson's my favorite female wrestling babe of all time. I should have loved this match. I did it. It was a clusterfuck. Hell, I want my money back the moment I saw the set. So, 0 out of 5 stars. Props to the three wrestlers and wrestlers, you know, Booker T, General Erection, a.k.a. Hugh Morris, a.k.a. Bill DeMont, and Major Guns, a.k.a. Tyree Buck, for actually putting effort where nobody else in that company was. It was awful. It was just god-awful. So, now it's time to talk about something positive. So, with that, we're going to get right into our review of Survivor Series. So, first, let me give you the rundown. Your commentating crew will be Gorilla Monsoon and Rowdy Roddy Piper. Of course, featuring interview segments from Mean Gene Okerlund, among others. Survivor Series 1990 with the tagline, the WWF Thanksgiving Night Tradition. Dated on November 22nd, 1990, with an attendance of 16,000 at the Hartford Civic Center in Hartford, Connecticut. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into Survivor Series 1999. First, we have a dark match to talk about. Dark match to take place here was Shane Douglas versus Buddy Rose. Obviously, it being a dark match means we have no video of it. But, you know, Shane Douglas versus Buddy Rose in a singles match. That, you know, should have been really interesting. Because this is, I think, 1990 was around the time when I think Shane Douglas was finally starting to develop, I think, on his own. From the little things I've seen. That would lead him to be the character he was in 93 when he helped start ECW. But our first match of the night, now mind you, every match at this pay-per-view is a 4-on-4 Survivor Series. Well, every match except the finale. It was basically a Survivor's grand finale match. What happened is there were 5 4-on-4 Survivor Series matches. And whoever had survived on the winning team in each match would go on to the grand finale. And there would be 2 teams. For instance, and, you know, there could be a 10-on-10 match. There could be a 10-on-5 match. Or in the case of what the grand finale was, a 3-on-5 Survivor Series elimination match. Every match is an elimination match, mind you. And so our first match was the Warriors, led by the WWF World Champion, The Ultimate Warrior, with the Legion of Doom of Hawk and Animal and the Texas Tornado, versus the perfect team of Demolition, Axe Smash, and Crush. Great to see Bryan Adams here. with their team captain, Mr. Perfect, along with Bobby Heenan and Mr. Fuji. You know, this, I think, was a solid opening match. Too bad the Warrior was in it. Legion of Doom versus Demolition is just the start of their feud. It's like, who was the better team? So it was fun to see them in there. Von Erich was fun to look at. But the best person in this match, bar none, was Mr. Perfect. He showed why he was Mr. Perfect. Like I said, I think a solid start. Just too bad Warrior's in it. Because, again, this is when Warrior was champion. I understand that he's passed away recently. Some might be saying too soon. Look, I'm not saying that I'm not sad that the guy is gone. But let's all be honest about ourselves. He wasn't exactly the best wrestler. It's great when you have charisma. But, you know, when you make Hulk Hogan look like Ric Flair, you have a problem with wrestling. Let's just put that there right now. So our next match of the evening was the Million Dollar Team of Ted DiBiase, his mystery partner, and the tag team of Rhythm and Blues, a.k.a. the Honky Tonk Man and Greg the Hammer Valentine, with Virgil, Jimmy Hart, and Brother Love for the mystery, which I'll reveal, versus the Dream Team of the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, Coco Beware, and the Hart Foundation of Bret Hart and Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Now, the mystery opponent, as it is revealed in the entrance, is the debut of The Undertaker. It's still, to this day, I think, awe-inspiring. I just Gorilla Monsoon and Roddy Ray Piper's reaction when they see him is beautiful. It immediately tells you this is a force to deal with. An Undertaker. This was match of the night. Even though it was actually the third shortest match. So it was only third shortest by less than a minute of the first match and the Hulkamaniacs match. But this match seemed like it went on for 20 minutes. But that's because there was so much to it. Just great back and forth. The Hart Foundation was great. Dusty Rhodes was great. Ted DiBiase was great. Everybody in this match was just great, including The Undertaker. It was a great debut for The Undertaker. And Bret Hart showcased why, in the coming years after this, he would be one of the wrestlers called upon to lead the company as one of the big main eventers. He showed main event status in this match. This was match tonight, easy. So just a great match all around. I loved how, I loved the finish to it. I loved the finish of Bret Hart on the reverse of the flying body press. I loved it. Made Ted DiBiase strong. And I love the fact that it wasn't a dirty win. I thought it was great. Moving on to our next match. Our next match is the team of the Visionaries, which features the Warlord, the team of Power and Glory, a.k.a. Hercules and Paul Roma, with Slick, and, of course, their team captain, the male model, Rick Martel, versus the Vipers, which is the team of Jimmy Snuka, the Rockers, a.k.a. Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty, and their team captain, Jake the Snake Roberts, who had absolutely something wrong with his eye. And they used it brilliantly to, like, scare the hell out of people. Because I was scared of him. This was such an interesting match. The match ends with the Visionaries winning. But not just they win, but they win with nobody from their team being eliminated. I mean, all four of their members are going on to the final match. Now, in one instance, I don't want to say it was a horrible choice, but it kind of gave away that, the good guys would win the next two matches because they had to do at least something to make the sides even though they didn't make them completely even, but they had to have at least more than, like, two members on that team. But yeah, just, you know, good match. Again, the war, you know, every pin was, you know, its own way shocking. You know, Shawn Michaels being eliminated finally after like 50, you know, just being continuously pounded on and being finished by the Powerplex, which I think this is the first time I really ever saw the Powerplex, which is an interesting move. It's an interesting, you know, suplex splash combination. Really well done by the Paul Hercules and Paul Roma. You know, it made sense that Shawn Michaels would finally go down after that. And then, you know, Jake the Roberts, of course, being counted out in that feud that he had with Martel. Again, leading to it, you know, it was at the point like, oh, you're like, oh, he's fighting against him with Rick Martel, and finally giving the DT, he does it. It's like, oh, he got away again. Leading that storyline. Just, you know what? Even though it did sort of give away who would win the next couple of matches, which should be obvious anyways, it was still well within its reach to, you know, being a very good match. I think it was right after this match that Mean Gene would interview Randy Savage, who cut a promo about he's going after Ultimate Warrior's Championship. Of course, this would be part of a feud that would lead to Macho Man costing the Warrior the title at the Royal Rumble 1991. And eventually led to that year's WrestleMania where it was under, it was Macho Man versus Warrior along with, you know, Slaughter versus Hogan. Excuse me while I take a swig of water. I need it because the next match is the team of the Hulkamaniacs, brother of Hacksaw Jim Duggan, the Big Boss Man, and Tugboat, a.k.a. the Shock Master. Of course, their team leader, the incredible, the amazing, the indestructible, the man with the 24-inch pythons. The amazing, the incredible Hulk Hogan, who actually was, I believe, returning, or at least in storyline-wise, was returning from an injury given to him by the team leader on the other team, the team of the Natural Disasters, which featured Haku, who was basically replaced. It seems like I've reviewed a lot of pay-per-views where Rick Rude is replaced by somebody. I recently reviewed a Halloween Havoc where he actually replaced other people for a change. But Haku was replacing Rick Rude, who had left the company. But Haku, Dino Bravo, and the Barbarian, of course, their team leader, Earthquake, was one of like the first people to like stop and really injure Hulk Hogan. you know, this is the third best match. It had a lot of energy and everything. And even though it is a bit sloppy, but it's a lot of big people going up against each other. But Big Boss Man had a lot of energy. Hulk Hogan had a lot. I mean, this is Hulk Hogan in his time. You know, Big Boss Man was great throughout the match, I thought. I love that Tugboat and Earthquake get into, you know, it's like, wait, get Tugboat in. It's like great to see Tugboat and Earthquake go at it. I do remember like you wanting to see Tugboat and Earthquake finally go at it because they're like two big guys. And of course, this was the age of the big wrestlers. And of course, Hogan, you know, he obviously defeats the Barbarian with a leg drop, but, you know, still quite enough time after, you know, the elimination of Tugboat and Earthquake. Overall, you know, I found the match very enjoyable. It was a solid match in that classic rock, you know, WWE late 1980s, early 1990s WWF wrestling. You know, with Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, Reddit, all those guys. This was WWF at its prime. This was just the way they did things. You know what it is? I feel it's a solid. It's very entertaining. At the end of the day, we can sit here and talk about technical prowess and just how amazing Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart looked. But at the end of the day, it's also about entertaining the crowd. And the fact is, I was very entertained by this match. Our next match had a lot more storyline. Or really was more storyline than it was really anything. Because you kind of knew who was going to win. And the way the match went, it was really to build up one character. Our final 4-on-4 Survivor Series elimination match before the grand finale is the team of the Alliance of Nikolai Volkov, who's now sided with the United States, Tino Santana, and the Bushwhackers of Bushwhacker Luke and Butch, versus the Mercenaries of Sergeant Slaughter, who has now defected to Iraq, Boris Zukov, and the Oriental Express of Sato and Pat Tanaka, with Mr. Fuji and General Anon. I do find it interesting that you have the Mercenaries being led by an American, and of course the Alliance made of completely of people who are from outside the United States. Tito from Mexico, Nikolai is from Russia, and the Bushwhackers are from Australia. Does anybody else find that interesting? Oh, God. Anyways, look, this is not a bad match per se. But it's like, first you have all three members, with the exception of Sergeant Slaughter, being eliminated quickly, mostly by Tito Santana, you know, defeating both Tanaka and Zukov with the flying forearm. Sato's defeated by Butch's battering ram. But then you have Sergeant Slaughter taking out one by one each member. Or almost each member. He takes out Nikolai Volkov with an elbow drop, takes out Luke with a gut buster, takes out Butch with a clothesline. And the only reason he didn't take out Tito Santana is because he was disqualified after Anon hit Santana with a flag, you know, disqualification, but in that game he's never pinned. This was more about building his heel character than it was about, you know, that grand finale. And you know what? To where it led to and ultimately what that storyline ended with, or at least where it ended at WrestleMania, this was a great way to build heat. This may not have been a match of the night candidate, but the storyline told in the match was damn good at building Sergeant Slaughter's heel character. Looking at it that way, I really enjoyed it. Again, because you hated Sergeant Slaughter. You already did hate him for betraying me. Sergeant Slaughter betraying America. How could that happen? That just didn't happen. And just you despised him even more after this match. So they did a great job at building up the heelness of Sergeant Slaughter in that match. Again, excuse me, as I take a swig of water. Wow, Mike Kyoto was towards the end of my notes, and it's like referees, Earl Hebner, Mike Kyoto, like, wow, and he was then there. I also find it interesting, I don't think they have it there, but maybe he was too young at this time, I don't know. But there's a referee that looks a whole lot like Shane McMahon. I just laugh at that. Anyways, before we get to the grand finale main event, which is now a 3-on-5, there's one more thing that happens in between there. And that there's this giant egg that's towards the entranceway. And like, oh, it's going to hatch tonight. And of course, it hatches. And this is where we see the debut of the Gobbledygooker, the most despised and most ridiculous and the most infamous wrestling character ever created in the WWF. You know, if you guys, well, at least I hope you guys have the WWE Network, because bar none, that's part of the reason this podcast exists, to tell you what pay-per-views to watch on the WWE Network. But Yeah, on the WWE Network in the Vault section, they have the Legends of Wrestling. And one of the best episodes there is the worst characters, where they talk about the worst. And there's a great debate about which character was worse, the Shockmaster or the Gobbledygooker. It's a fun debate. It was great. It was great to hear Dusty Rhodes and Pat Patterson, Mick Foley, and of course the man who should be in the Hall of Fame, Michael P.S. Hayes, debate that. Like which character was worse, the Shockmaster and the Gobbledygooker? I'm gonna sit here and say it right now, the Gobbledygooker, because the Gobbledygooker was doomed from the start. From the moment it came out of the egg, no matter who it was in there, it was doomed from the start. Especially when you hear that. One of the ideas possibly to come out of it was the Undertaker, but not as – or as the Undertaker's debut, but not as the Undertaker, but as the Eggman. And somebody finally got a brain and realized, we can't do this to the guy that killed his career. See, the reason I say the Shockmaster isn't worse is because as horrible as the Shockmaster was, and like, I mean, the fact that somebody – Dusty Rhodes says, I want a glitterized Stormtrooper – helmet, and somebody apparently took him by his word, was the fact that, you know what, I think Dusty's telling the truth. I think he was sabotaged. I think if somebody had not put that board there and caused, Uncle Ted, or what was it, Uncle Fred, excuse me, the trip, that debut might have worked. But unfortunately, apparently somebody sabotaged Dusty Rhodes' idea. And we have the infamous debut of the Shockmaster, but I think the Gobbledygooker is much worse than the Shockmaster. And it's, oh my God, you can tell that they are, that Roddy Roddenberry Piper is grasping for things to say, because it's the most ridiculous thing anybody, they were booing. It's like, but God bless Roddy Piper and Gorilla Monsoon for trying their damnedest to sell that thing. So let's move on to our last match, the team finale Survivor Series match featuring the team of – did they give them a name? No, they just gave them the name of the people in it. So the team of Hulk Hogan, The Ultimate Warrior, and Tito Santana versus the team of Ted DiBiase, Rick Martel, The Warlord, and Power and Glory, a.k.a. Hercules and Paul Roma. You know what? I felt it was a good finish to the match. You know, there was a bit back and forth to it, and just the way different people were eliminated. And here's the elimination order. Warlord gets eliminated 28 seconds in from a flying forearm from Tino Santana. Tino Santana gets eliminated by DiBiase from a hot shot. Paul Roma gets eliminated after a missed powerplex. Hogan hits a clothesline on Paul Roma and eliminates him. Rick Martel shows what a chicken shit coward he is and deserts his team. DiBiase is eliminated by Hogan after a leg drop, and Hercules soon after is eliminated after a leg drop from Hogan, and then Warrior comes in and does his little splash. And not that Warrior, that's all Warrior. Warrior does a couple things, but Hogan really carried this match. Again, when this is the criticism I have of the Ultimate Warrior. When you make Hulk Hogan look like he's Ric Flair. And look, I am a huge Hogan fan, but I'll be the first to admit, you know, on pure wrestling skill, he will never, ever be in anybody's top 25. Hell, I don't even think top 50. Okay, I feel confident to say that. I'm still a fan. He was a power guy. He was a power. He was a punch, punch, punch. You know, five moves of doom. Hit the big boot and leg drop and call it a night. But at least Hogan had more effort and could last more than 5 minutes. I mean, Hogan, for as limited as his moveset was, Hogan could do 20-minute matches. Because Hogan knew how to sell shit. Hulk Hogan's one of the best sellers in the business, and you can't deny that. Especially at this time, he was one of the best in the business. So Hogan, again, I thought Hogan did a great job really carrying the match. I thought, and you know what? I felt the whole thing was a satisfying end to the night overall. I'm looking, because I'm trying to think of favorite moves that I saw through the mat, our favorite moments, which I'll get to in a second. But overall, you know, I felt it was a very enjoyable pay-per-view. There wasn't an awful match. You know, as much as I'm criticizing the Warrior did put effort into it, and I have to give him that. The Warrior did, you know, despite the fact that, again, he's very stiff and everything, but he had the crowd into it. Everybody was into it. Yeah, he had the gobbledygooker, and that brings it down because, again, there's no way you can give a perfect score at all to a pay-per-view that has the gobbledygooker debuting. And even without the gobbledygooker, this is far from a perfect pay-per-view, but it's an entertaining pay-per-view. And it's a very solid and, you know what, very fun pay-per-view to watch. So, favorite moments? The debut of The Undertaker is number one. That's the number one moment, because it's the debut of The Undertaker, a man that would help define who the WWE is for, let's say, 1992, for damn near 24 goddamn years. Hell, he's still defining what the WWE is. But for 24 years, The Undertaker helped define what WWE is. The Powerplex on Shawn Michaels, I really enjoy that. And again, Hulk Hogan hitting the leg drop on Ted DiBiase, because you always love seeing Hulk Hogan hit the leg drop on Ted DiBiase for whatever reason. It's always fun to watch. Those are my, I guess, my favorite that I can think of. I mean, I really can only think of two, and then I threw Hulk Hogan in there because, hey, I am a Hulk Hogan, Mark. You can't blame me for that. Let's see. You know what? I could throw in there. I could throw in, the counter of Greg Valentine. You know, Bret Hart's performance. You know what? Bret Hart's and Shawn Michaels' performance as moments, because they really showed that they were both heading for main event status with this pay per view. As for my three favorite matches, number three is the Hulkamaniacs versus the Natural Disasters. Number two is the Vipers versus the Visionaries. And, of course, my number one match is the Million Dollar Team versus the Dream Team. Overall, this is a solid pay-per-view. It's very fun to watch. And you know what? If you've never seen the Survivor Series, in particular, I've seen an older Survivor Series, this is a great Survivor Series to watch all around, regardless of what time you period came in, whether you were there for the Rock and Roll Connection or not, whether you know you're just starting. This is a great way to see the old style. It's a great bit of nostalgia for us, you know, wrestling fans who have been wrestling fans for a long time. Just overall, a very solid pay-per-view from front to back. I give Survivor Series a 3 out of 5. Just a solid pay-per-view, very entertaining. It's far from perfect, because it's what the Survivor Series is. And again, anything with the gobbledygooker is immediately brought down a lot. But when you have things like the debut of The Undertaker, when you have Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels showcasing why they would soon be main event stars, when you have Hulk Hogan at the top of his game, when you have great stories being told that would lead to great moments like you saw with what happened with Sergeant Slaughter, you know what? It's worth watching. So I highly, unlike Halloween Havoc 2000, I highly, highly, highly suggest you watch Survivor Series 1990, because I think it's a great example of just what the WWE was in its, you know, rock and roll wrestling prime. So that is it for this episode of CM Juice Wrestling Reviews. I hope you enjoyed. Remember, there are several ways to contact the show if you so choose. One, you can email us at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. Make sure you put in the title that's for CMJ's Wrestling Reviews. You know, if I get any emails, I will read them on the show, I promise you. So send me those emails. Also, you can contact us on Stitcher by going to stitcher.com and liking the Absolution Network. That's where you can find all our podcasts on Stitcher. And I really have to get to updating that, so I apologize for that, folks. And, of course, you can always find us on Facebook by searching for the Absolution Network. Like us and leave us a comment there as well. And you can always leave a comment on this post on our website, which you can find at I'm doing this podcast at 12:30 at night, ladies and gentlemen, so I apologize. Botchamatis strikes again. But you can find that website ID at www.132productions.an. Botchamatis strikes again. Strike two. Will a third strike happen? I don't think so. Let's try this one more time. You can find us at www.an.132productions.com. Third time's the charm. I can't make fun of Maddie J now. Damn it. I'm still looking forward to that, too. But, yeah, you can find the website and leave us a comment there, too. You also make sure to check out all the other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes the Otaku Momentum. Shin Tiger Curl will be returning soon with new videos. John Ramos will be returning soon with new videos. I have some new podcasts on the horizon. And, of course, Tom's Prerogative, my animation podcast, check it out. Of course, Gina, Chris, and the Shaft Plus podcast, which you can find at www.shaftplus.com. And, of course, my Comic Book Crazy podcast, Insight, with Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, my Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. So, that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. Next week, we continue our look at the Thanksgiving tradition that features gang rules. That's right. It's time to take a look at the most controversial event in wrestling history, and I will have a very special guest. A man of the province that this pay-per-view took place will be joining me. A man of Canada fame. Canada's favorite son, Matty J, will be here with me as we take a look at WWE Survivor Series 1997. So until next time, and I apologize for having to do this as quiet as I possibly can since it's 12:30 at night, but until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CMJ. I'm the best Jew in the world, baby!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around, all around, I believe it, I'm too negative, but I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. I stand on my feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. Stealing my love will be falling and stealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time and start to feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be falling and stealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the Lakers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up in there, now you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life, but